You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Broadway Gives Back podcast. I'm your host, Jan Svensson. This podcast spotlights Broadway actors, shows, and organizations in their pursuit of social impact and philanthropy. Join us as some of the brightest lights on Broadway share their stories about their favorite charities and how they got involved, and the people and the causes who benefited from these philanthropic efforts. Jim Glaub is a recognized leader in marketing, social media, web design, video production, and more for live entertainment, and he has worked on over 50 Broadway shows. He's an international speaker on technology and theater, and he's founded Super Awesome Friends, an agency dedicated to connecting brands with live entertainment. In London, he was the deputy head of content and digital media for the Society of London Theatre, where he helped raise the profile of the West End theatre scene. In New York, he was the VP of content and community at Sereno Coin, the nation's longest-running live entertainment ad agency. I've had the privilege to work with Jim on many Tony Award shows, and I'm so happy to welcome him here today to talk about an incredible holiday project called Miracle on 22nd Street. Jim, welcome to the Broadway Gives Back podcast.
Jan, first of all, thank you so much for having me. And thank you for shedding light on so many of these great organizations and people that give back. It's just so wonderful that you provide this for so many people to understand that our industry is very generous and very giving. And so thank you for that.
Well, I wanted you as a guest on the Broadway Gives Back podcast today because you really do give back and you're a very important behind the scenes member of this community. So it felt only fitting to have you here today, especially as the holidays are approaching. Before we get into the Miracle on 22nd Street discussion, which is so awesome, like the name of your company, I want to start by talking about brooches and unicorns. So you love brooches. Let's start with that. You own hundreds of brooches. In fact, I have seen you hundreds of times, whether at meetings or out for coffee or drink or lunch, and I have never seen you without a brooch on your lapel. So I don't think I've ever asked you in all this time, like, where did this love for this piece of jewelry as a defining statement come from? Tell us the history here.
Well, that is amazing that you brought up brooches. I love them so much. I'm currently, for those who are listening and would like to know, I'm currently wearing a little martini glass brooch because tonight, when we recorded this podcast, is the opening of Company on Broadway. So, of course, I'll drink to that. It's just been an amazing. I love my brooch collection because it's an amazing conversation starter at parties. I also am in branding, so it's always nice to like have something that people can remember you by. It's like, at least at the very end, it's like, oh, that guy, you know, Jim Glaub, he wears brooches. And everyone's like, oh yeah.
Like, when did you get your first brooch? Like, how did that even come about?
Like any of us who have our grandmother's collectible brooches, right? I remember getting that my mom had the ones that my grandmother had, and they were very strange. Like, one was like a glitter frog, and one was like a glittered spider, and like she had all these weird animal brooches, and I just loved them. And so I think from very young I was just like, let's go, let's I'm going to wear brooches. I know it's like for women of a certain age, but actually it's become very trendy now. There's like even a New York Times article about how celebrities are wearing brooches to opening nights and different events. So I've been doing it.
I think you made it trendy. I think you were a trendsetter. And then there's unicorns. I mean, who doesn't love a unicorn? But you really love unicorns. And you've kind of incorporated unicorns into your gestalt. Now, I'm not a therapist, but I would love to analyze this unicorn thing with you.
Well, I love, you know, in the tech world, the unicorn, it means, a company or a business that essentially breaks all the rules and breaks all the norms, whether financially or benchmarks. And also the fact that it's a mysterious, you know, magical animal. I just think it's so, I definitely feel deeply that I see unicorns in my dreams. I love that they're now, every time I see one in real life, I because they've gotten really popular. And now when I see one, I feel like I'm on the right track. Like I've talked to a lot of people who feel like they have animals in their life that sort of they check in with, you know, like that, or they see, and that's for me a unicorn. It's just a way to say like, hey, you're going on the right track, unicorn, don't worry.
I love it. And let's moving on a different track, which is the Miracle on 22nd Street. So it really is a miracle. I want you to tell the whole story of how this came to be. But initially, you received these mysterious letters to your apartment, and you acted upon it. And so just tell the whole story. I mean, it's so amazing. And it's so amazing what you've done.
Oh, thank you, Jan. Well, oh boy. Like any good story, it begins with a mystery. about 11 years ago, I was living in an apartment in Chelsea with my then partner, and we were told by our previous roommate, the people that lived there before us, mm-hmm. they're like, oh, just so you know, like, you're gonna get these letters to Santa delivered to the apartment. It's only a few, but we're not really sure what to do with them, and we just wanted to let you know. And we didn't realize a couple of years had gone by of living in the apartment, and a couple of the letters came through, but it's just a couple very random letters to Santa, with, you know, Santa Claus with the address of this apartment in Chelsea. And, you know, in it was a Santa letter with some requests for basic stuff that kids would need for the holidays, right? Didn't think anything of it. I think we threw them away because it was just like, whatever. But two years after we had lived there, not just one came in or two, but 10, 30, 50, 100, and then it ended up with 400 letters to Santa. This was 11 years ago now. And we were beside ourselves with this problem because, again, if it's one or two of something, you don't think about it. It's not that big of a deal, right? You're like, oh, that's just a strange occurrence. This is a real something. Something happened that all of these letters to Santa came to our apartment. It was stacking up towards the middle of December, and we were like, we have to do something. Simultaneously, we were throwing do you remember it was like the height of Mad Men and 60s, like Promises was on Broadway. Mm-hmm. Like 60s were real.
I remember.
You remember
yes.
that time,
yes.
right?
Yes,
everyone had the pencil dresses. And so we threw a 1960s holiday party that year. And it was fantastic, and it was such a really fun fun party. But a couple of friends saw the stack of letters. They saw the stack of letters in the corner of the apartment, and were like, "Jim, what is this stack of letters?" I was like, "Well, let me tell you, we're getting all these letters to Santa." So what ended up happening is that a couple of friends were like, "Oh, well, we'll take a," you know, they started to read them at the party. And people started to say, you know, I'll just take a letter. I'll just fulfill this. I'll take this one. I'll take this one. And everyone at the party sort of organically started to take a letter to Santa. And it really opened up my eyes. It was like, oh, snap. This is what we can do. We can get the community around this to take these letters so that these kids' wishes of whatever they needed on the letters would be fulfilled. So then it's funny because Jan, I think my next, I was like, oh, I gotta get rid of these letters. And I remember, I think my next call was to the Broadway League, and mm-hmm. I think it was you. And I was like, I got these letters. I come by your office and if you guys can take them. And I was like, yeah, come on by. And I remember it was Rachel at the Broadway League as well, who helped take some of the letters. And I remember you and Charlotte, everybody was like, let's do this. And it really, I went to the Broadway.com offices, obviously all of our friends at Spocko and Serino and AKA and everybody that was there, like, we're like, let's take a letter. Let's do this. It sort of became, truly, the Broadway community was the first to jump on, mm-hmm. on this, because that was my people. Those are my, right. Obviously, all of my friends and then my Broadway family. And Jan, it was such a hard time because each one we had to read the letter, you know, pass it off to the individual to fulfill it. And it was hard because these letters were not, they were very sad.
Yeah. Can you like describe some of them that are most memorable? I mean, don't give it too much detail. I don't want to, you know, embarrass anybody, but like what were these kids asking for and where do these kids come from?
Well, the thing about the letters that are so strange is that that year they were all throughout the boroughs of New York. So there was from Staten Island, from the Bronx, a lot of families from Harlem and Brooklyn, as well as a few right in Manhattan. So it really was a representation of New York City and a lot. And that's another thing that was strange about this. I was like, why are these coming from all over different parts of New York City? It wasn't like one area, right? The addresses were all scattered over, even some in, I remember, even up really far north. And in it, some of the letters that I remember range from something very simple as, you know, I'd like some, you know, a 16-year-old girl who wanted some makeup for school, you know, or coats or shoes or socks. But one story that really stuck with me was actually a letter that I gave to Danielle Boyle, who works at Serena Coin. We were, she wanted a letter and I gave it to her and we read it together. And in the letter, there was a boy who said he was complaining about some back issues. He was having trouble sleeping at night. And that's because he was sleeping on his family's couch because he didn't have a bed to sleep in and had asked for some sort of air mattress or single bed or something that, you know, would be his Christmas present. And that, I mean, honestly, we were reading the letter, Danielle, and like we had caused a group of people coming around us to read the letter and we were all just like crying hysterically. And the good news is that the kid got the bed and really opened up. I think that was a moment for us and for me that opened up, you know, it goes so much deeper than just toys or basic, you know, just like a basic video game or something like that. A lot of these people are going without the basic needs. And I'm not even sure everyone wants a Christmas toy, but like socks and coats and things that are just sort of the things that we weren't always really excited about as a kid, but need mm-hmm. and look forward to, was really a magical part of this.
So you get these letters and you start to, you know, create, find friends of yours that are going to fulfill the letters, but then it goes to the next level because now you turn it into a 501c3, right?
Right. So, well, what's really interesting about the evolution of this story was that our friend Sarah Klein was at that party. She is a documentarian and was like, this is so fascinating. I'm really interested in this story. Can we follow you around? And Jan, as you know, I don't love the attention, but I agree.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I agreed to be on camera to do this.
Wait, I just have to explain to all of our listeners, Jim is a great interviewer and he's usually the one doing the interviews, but he also does love the limelight. Go on.
I love a little attention. Come on. just want to be loved.
You are loved.
So So she followed us around this journey. And honestly, it was as much as me going from offices to offices, passing out letters. I there was a time where I was on the street asking people to take a letter. It was so many. There were so many letters. And so she followed us around and then published. I didn't know, but she had actually arranged for a deal with the New York Times to post the video of this story on the New York Times. Jan, it made it on the home page of the New York Times that year on Christmas Eve. I remember I was, Dylan and I were flying back to my home in Kansas City, and we got off the plane and we were instant celebrities. Like, people in the airport were recognizing us and they're like, oh my God, you're Santa.
You're Santa, yeah.
I was like, oh no, what happened? And what happened is that this story caused a real outpour of people that wanted to help. They wanted to take a letter. They wanted to fulfill a letter, which is the through line to this whole thing, Jan, that's been so fantastic, is that people really want to connect. They wanted to connect with these families that didn't, that through the magic of Christmas and the magic of sort of the simplicity of a Santa letter, were able to feel like they could help. We had so many people, but Jan, we had given away the letters. We went back to the post office. There was like I couldn't get to all of them because it was like so late, but that year, there was only about 50 letters that we had to go back to the post office, which was devastating to me because I usually do things full out and all the way to completion, but it was just so many. And we weren't organized. What it started was the New York Times posted hundreds of thousands, genuinely thousands of people reached out and were like, we can help. So that's what birthed the nonprofit organization Miracle on 22nd Street. And what we do to this day, 11 years later, is that we connect families in need with real life elves. So it is. And Jan, I have to tell you, the letters are still coming into the apartment in Chelsea. We don't know still to this day where they're coming from.
It's unbelievable. It really is. Well, first of all, I want to be an elf. And I'm going to, in the episode page for this podcast, we're going to put in the link. So if anybody wants to be an elf, they can join. But it really is an amazing project.
The most important question, where did the letters come from?
Where did the letters come from?
Do you want the magical answer or the practical answer?
I want both.
I want it all.
I do. I want it all.
Okay. So
first, give me the magical answer. No, first, give me the magical answer.
The magical answer is that actually the people that lived there before us said that the letters were coming. And then they said that the people before them said that the letters were coming. Uh-huh. So we know that for a fact it's been going on in this apartment for at least 30 years, right? Which is crazy to me that these letters have been sort of to Santa have been coming into this apartment number 7
random apartment on 22nd Street.
Yeah, exactly. And the weird thing is that we found out through some people who had done research on this story, like there's a lot of people love this, the mystery of this, and there's some people who did some research to find out that the street actually on 22nd Street was the original estate of Clement Clark Moore. In fact, there's a park named after him right on 22nd Street. Why is Clement Clark Moore important? Because he's the writer of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas and All Through the House.
You know, it's so funny because you always said it was so mysterious. I never thought there was actually a reason behind it. So there is kind of.
It's weird. Like what? So it turns out that after doing some people had done some like serious research on this. And by the way, we still don't know the answer. Like, we still don't know where it's coming from. But some people have done the research on this, is that when he published that very famous poem in the newspaper, essentially it was like before the New York Times, there was like a major newspaper that published this poem. And he basically created what we know of as sort of the modern day, like the reindeers hadn't really existed before then. There's a lot of like elements of like what we know as a modern day Santa in some ways because of Clement Clark Moore in this poem. Now, what we found out, this is amazing, is that he actually had to go anonymous because so many people thought that he was Santa Claus and that they were sending him letters to his estate on 22nd Street, where there was a smaller apartment that is where he used to live. But he had a bigger estate at the time. So it's amazing. Like, had these letters been coming around since the 1800s, like, that would be crazy.
Oh my God. I did not know any of this. I just thought, because you've always talked about it as a mystery. I didn't know there really was like some legitimacy behind this mystery.
I mean, that's the only thing we can think of. The other is that, was it a part of like some sort of PTA mailing list? Was there someone who lived there like 50 years ago that had like been a part of some sort of program? But to be honest, I think this has been going on down the street for hundreds of years.
Wow. Okay. Now I have goosebumps. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And also, I heard a rumor, don't know if it's true, that this is being turned into a film. True? It's truth? Yes?
Oh my God, Jan, yes, it is. It has been. So when the little mini documentary was featured on the New York Times, I got a voicemail message, and it was amazing. It was a voice saying, "Hey, Jim, this is Tina Fey. How are you? I love your story and I want to turn it into a movie. Can we do this?" And I called her back and was like, "Yes, absolutely. Let's do this."
Well, you call her back first and go, "Is this really Tina Fey?"
Yeah. Yes. It was like, not every day you get a call from Tina Fey wanting to make a movie about your life. So that's amazing.
So that's it's happening.
Been, yeah. Yeah. So it's been, you know, it's been, this is, this would be Tina's, I think, first movie since Mean Girls. And they were about to, right now, it's still, the script is done. It's being, it's Universal is the producers of this, which is amazing. And it's a beautiful movie. It's basically the exact same story that I just told you, but with a lot of classic elements of New York. There's going to be some musical numbers. The characters work on Broadway. It's going to be it'll be a love letter to New York, I think, which is I'm so excited about. And what a fantastic opportunity. Can you imagine people seeing the movie or streaming the movie nowadays and then feeling inspired to connect with a family in need, even if they don't do it through Miracle on 22nd Street? What if this is something that became something you did? You went, you've shopped for your family, and then you also helped another family in need. Like, what a difference that could make.
This is so perfect. I'm so happy you're on this podcast. I have one question that's just burning right now. Who is going to play you? And if it's not cast yet, who would you like to play you in the film?
Oh my God. I mean, well, I mean, I think it's got to be Ryan Reynolds, right? I mean, come on, look at this for the readers, for your listeners. No, I genuinely really want Titus to do it. Like, I've been telling, I was like, I want Titus Burgess to, like, I want that. He's perfect. Like, he is.
Just as soon as you said it, I just went, oh my God, that's perfect. He's perfect. He's perfect. Should be Titus. Yeah.
It should be Titus. So
Tina, are you listening?
I really would love that. But, you know, this was 11 years ago, right? And it's going to be interesting. I'm sure it's going to be all comedy legends in this, and it's going to be amazing, and I'm so, so excited. It's a wonderful opportunity. I hope, come on, it's time. Let's get this movie going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm, you know, so much of what we've talked about on this podcast with other guests is how to be philanthropic. And some of the most significant things we've talked about are not just writing a big old check, but like actually doing something yourself. And this is a perfect example of something that is relatively easy to do and yet would have such a strong impact and would also feel so good. So it's an amazing project. And I'm excited. I am definitely going to elf it out here. So I'll get my letter and fulfill it. Do you vet the letters? Like, how do you know that they're all legit? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what ends up, we have a team of volunteer elves who essentially go through each of the letters. I used to do it all myself. And Jan, it is, first of all, it's like kind of bad for your mental health. Like it's a lot of sad letters, right? Mm. I mean, and a lot of them are really hopeful and joyful, but you know, a lot of them tell you what is going on in their lives, and you sort of really sort of uncover that over the past 11 years, I can tell you so finitely what is going on in the country, what's going on with our world based off of these Santa letters through the eyes of these children. Like, it's fantastic. I can tell you what's happening in regards to obviously a pandemic, but I can tell you what the hottest toy is as well.
What's the hottest toy this year?
Obviously I think a lot of people want like the electronics and things like that. There's a lot of puzzles are back. Mm. A lot of kids want puzzles. I think that's very funny. And, what the big ones of like Paw Patrol is really popular right now. We get lots of Paw Patrols. We get lots of the LOL dolls are still really hot. And then, you know, all the basic stuff like coats and shoes and,
right.
You know, that's always good. But everybody wants their fun toys too.
Oh, that's so nice. It really is. But you've also, you're an elf in so many ways. I mean, you've also worked on so many other philanthropic endeavors. And I wondered if you could just share some of the ones that have meant the most to you personally and professionally.
Yeah, I think it's really important right now to focus on diversifying our stages in our theater. We're actively involved in the Black Theater Coalition to help diversify the makeup of the behind the scenes aspects of Broadway and the theater. And I'm sure, you know, that the T and Warren are just doing amazing things over there and Liko and the entire team. And it's always been something really important to me because I've always thought Broadway is such a merry band of misfits and everybody is welcome. And I'm so sad that there's this perception that it's not, because it is. It's just there's the doors haven't always been open, or the focus on diversity and changing the color and makeup of our Broadway just hasn't been a main focus. And now I'm glad that the spotlight is, but and thanks to folks at the Black Theater Coalition, I think that is something that is really, really going to make a massive difference in our industry, don't you think?
Absolutely. And we've had some guests on the podcast from Black Theater United and from the Broadway Advocacy Coalition, and you know, all of these groups are so important. And I would say there was one question I asked a lot of the guests during the pandemic, and I said, when Broadway reopens, what is the one most important thing that, you know, you'd like to see change? And I would say 90% of the guests, if not more, said that there just needs to be more equity and inclusion on Broadway. And you're right. I think a lot of people thought that Broadway was so inclusive and so diverse, and it is, and it isn't at the same time. So I think the community needs to do a lot of work in that area, and we are, and it's good.
And Jan, you've been, I mean, that has been a cornerstone of the work that you did at the Broadway League, and with your charitable aspects. It's something that people have been doing this. There are people that are doing the work. It's just now, finally, we're starting to see that there's a spotlight on it, and that it is something that needs to be put to the front. We have to talk. We have to tell stories. You know, we have to tell stories of our Indigenous people. We have to tell stories of Black and Brown people. We have, and not just about the struggle. It has to be like joy. We can have joyful stories, and stories that make a massive difference in creating empathy. That's what we do. That's all our thing. And that's one of the things too I love about Miracle on 22nd Street is that there's an empathy, right? The thing that I love about this, as well as what the theater can do, is that once you read these letters through the lens of someone else, through the lens of another family, you start to realize that they're just like us, right? And that they're just like you. They have feelings and heart. They just don't have the privilege. And that is a massive opportunity for us to be able to say, we can help here, resources, time, energy. There's ways to do this. So yeah, I think I'm just so happy you're doing this, because I think Broadway has such a big heart and has always been the center of trying to make a difference using empathy.
Absolutely. So you and I have worked on many Tony Awards charitable efforts together, specifically in arts education. And we worked together on the Excellence in Theater Education Award that's sponsored by Carnegie Mellon University. And I wanted just to talk about arts ed for a second and why it's so important, and specifically why it's so important to you.
Absolutely. I'm on the advisory board of the American Theater Wing, which is a massive part of what they what the organization does, is all about trying to get into schools and communities that don't necessarily have a theater department, to say that there's an outlet for you, there's a place for you, and there's a place for you in the theater. And what's so great about that is that happened to me. I grew up really poor in a small town, in a suburb of Kansas City. And we didn't have, I didn't really have access to go see Broadway shows. We didn't have the money to go downtown to the fancy theaters. So for me, the theater, if it weren't for the theater department in my school, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't be able to, I wouldn't have known that the theater is so a part of my blood and so part of me, if it wasn't for, my middle school teacher, Randy Jackson, for the high school teacher, Mrs. Call, who is, they're still friends to this day. And, they're people that opened the door to what theater could be, even on a small level. It was just opening the door on what this is. So yes, Jan, the arts education and creating that access into schools is paramount, because it can also address the issue of diversity. It can also address the issue of empathy. It can fix a lot of things.
Yeah, mental health and so many things. And just,
educate. Right? Yeah. Physicality, on your feet, right? It's not, it doesn't have the stigma of gym, right? It's very physical. It's very, it's great for your mental health. The theater, and it's a community. You're building a small community. That's one of the things I loved about high school for me, is that the theater in our theater department, it was the musicals brought in the jocks and the cheerleaders and the people in student council. It was a great amalgamation of different people. And I think that's what Broadway is. And that's what we are. We're just a mix of a variety of different people. And we need to expand that, right? We need to make that bigger. And we'll just be better for it. We absolutely will be.
Agreed. So like me, you've had the opportunity to interview many people in the Broadway community for various programs and content that you've created to work on. Look, we're so lucky. I pinch ourselves, a million times just to the amazing people that we get to talk to and interview, right? But I wondered if you could talk about some of the interviews or interactions that you've had that have been the most meaningful or memorable for you over the years.
Wow. That's an amazing question, because we're in this world where the theater mixes so many different types of people, right? We have people from the film world, we have people from the creative arts, you get to work with politicians sometimes, it's all these different types of people that the theater brings together. That's a really good question. I would say, I have to say, one of my probably my favorite interviews of all time was when I got to interview the amazing Judi Dench. She was so kind, and I got to go to her place in Surrey in London, and she was so kind and warm, and she offered me iced coffee, and she was just like, showed us around, and she was just like the most lovely individual, and just talked about theater and just her love of it, and talked about Kenneth Branagh and how she just loves theater and how it's the most important thing in her life. And I think at the end of the day, when you get to talk to people and you just get to talk to people about what they love, it is amazing, right, Jan? You experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. So here we are in this season of giving and charity and philanthropy, and they're top of mind for everybody right now. And I just wondered, what advice would you give listeners about being people who take action and give back to the world? You know, many people in your situation with the Santa letters would have thrown them out, put them in a bag, said return to sender. But, you know, you took action. You made a decision to start a 501c3 and find elves and take action and make the world a better place. So I wondered, you know, if you had any advice on how we can all become more proactive philanthropists like you.
Oh, that's so kind to say. A proactive philanthropist. It's funny when you label it, you're like, oh, it's just sort of what you do, right? It's like, oh, you're just like, and then you're like, oh, I guess that's there's a part of that. That's the thing. I think that, look, it started with small acts of kindness. Like, this wasn't for Miracle. It was actually really simple. Just try to get the word out that people can help another family, and you almost worked as a connector. I think everyone thinks that, as you experience, it's like, oh, it's just writing a check. But it's actually so much. There's so much from the little to the big that you can do within the world of making the world a better place. Even a smile to a stranger can go a long way, mm-hmm. right? And that is
sure.
free and easy to do. Maybe not easy for some, but
it's hard to do right now with a mask on. But yes, generally speaking,
true. Thumbs up.
Exactly.
But I think that. It's so important that we act in service to each other and that we are helping each other, because it will pay off. It is, the karma is real. Mm. It is, the more you give, the more you get. The more smiles you give, the more smiles you'll get. The more love you put out there, the more it comes back to you. Of course, I don't do it to get it, but it does. I'm centered and blessed with the most amazing friends and family and people who just change my life every day because I do what I can to give back as much as I can. And that's I think it can be very simple. It could be very big, right? Like starting a full nonprofit that does this for thousands of people, but it doesn't have to be that. It could be something very small and something very meaningful on a regular basis.
I think that's a perfect piece of advice for people, especially this time of year. I hope everybody goes and checks out the link on the episode page and becomes an elf. I'm going to go sign up to be an elf right after we end this recording. And I'm just so happy to be your friend, Jim, and so happy that you came on our podcast. Thank you.
Jan, thank you so much. You are an inspiration and a light and an innovator and a futurist. And I just love that about you. So thank you for giving that to the world.
Thanks. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Broadway Gives Back podcast. Broadway Gives Back is part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Special thanks to my producing partner, writer, editor, and friend, Jim Lochner. And thank you to everyone at BPN, including Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and Kimberly Garris. I'd also like to thank Julian Hills from the Bulldog Agency and Eric Becker from Broderick Street Music. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream your podcasts. You can also follow Broadway Gives Back on Facebook and Instagram at Broadway Gives Back Podcast and on Twitter at Broadway Gives. To learn more, visit bpn.fm/Broadway Gives Back. Thanks so much.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.